Welcome back to Missing. I am Tim, here today with Jennifer and Lance. How are you both doing today?
Pleasure to be here, Tim.
Yeah, good to be here as well, and really looking forward to digging into this particular disappearance, this really tragic mystery that once again brings us into the universe of the Great Smoky Mountains National Park that is helmed by our good friend and expert independent investigator, Laura Risty.
Yeah, Laura is great, and we had an interview with her about this case, the disappearance of Dennis Martin from June 14th, 1969, from the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. And this is a really mysterious case, and I told Jen before we started rolling that I think this might be the scariest disappearance that I know of.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking in regards to what people heard, what people claim to have seen, and the fact that this is just a little boy and, you know, in this area. No matter what happened, it's scary.
Yeah, there's several aspects of it that put it there for me. But it's really just the amount of time that he wasn't, like there wasn't eyes on him, and then he's just gone. You know, there's some reports here and there, but he just went missing. And I hate saying like into thin air. That's like a pet peeve of mine. I hate saying that, but I really don't know what else to say in this case.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. You mentioned that window of time that this little boy had to go missing. I think it was something like 5 minutes where everybody just sort of turned around and he's gone.
Okay, and we're going to get into the case in just a moment. But before we do, if you would like to hear Missing ad-free, you can do so now with Missing Premium. You can sign up for early releases and ad-free episodes, as well as our weekly bonus show. And we're available now on Apple Podcasts, so you can sign up right there. But if you're not an Apple user, you can go to missing.supportingcast.fm and sign up for the same product there.
And Tim, I don't know if you realize this, but Jen was actually texting me a few minutes ago about where to find us on social media. Can you fill her in on that?
Yeah, I still don't know.
Neither do I.
Sure thing, Jen and Lance and listeners. You can find us on social media at MissingCSM. Thank you very much for listening. We're going to break quick for commercial here, and we'll be right back to speak about the disappearance of Dennis Martin.
Step into the hidden corridors of the past with Hometown History, where every episode uncovers the untold stories and secrets nestled in the streets and alleys of our own backyards. We bring history to life, revealing the extraordinary in the ordinary, from local legends to forgotten tales that shape the communities we know today. Tune into Hometown History and embark on a journey through time, right from where you are. Gather round, friend, and join me by the fire. I have a secret to share. When I was a child, I lived with my grandma. She allowed me to watch unsolved mysteries. Fast forward to 2008, my freshman year of college. A series of armed robberies on campus escalated into a serial rapist's reign of terror. That's when I created my first crime podcast. In January 2014, I picked up the podcast again from my college roommate who fell for an underage girl online, to the chilling story of a murdered nun in 1969 Baltimore, and in the Throwaway series, I share my own journey of overcoming homelessness and how that experience led me to unmask a serial killer and identify three of his Jane Doe victims. This is Foul Play Crime Series, where the stories are real and the truth is waiting to be discovered.
Do you find yourself captivated by the inexplicable, entranced by enigmas, and tantalized by the unknown? We are Shane and Josh Waters, brothers who will weave you through tales that have mystified us for years. From haunted hotels to inexplicable disappearances,
our episodes offer you a panoramic view of the world's greatest mysteries, leaving no stone unturned, no clue unnoticed.
With a gripping narrative, we invite you to join us on a journey into realms of the unexplained.
We're unraveling the mysteries that have perplexed humanity for ages.
So, armchair detectives, curious minds, and seekers of the strange, it's time to put on your headphones and dim the lights.
Dive into the uncanny world of the Mystery Inc. podcast and prepare for a journey into the unknown that you'll never forget. And remember, some mysteries are better left unsolved, but not unexplored.
Dennis Martin went missing from the Great Smoky Mountains National Park in Tennessee on June 14, 1969. Dennis was 6 years old, and he was just a few days shy of his seventh birthday when he, his father William, his older brother Doug, and his grandfather Clyde Martin went to the Great Smoky Mountains National Park for a Father's Day camping trip. Dennis's mom, sister, one brother, and their German shepherd named Lady stayed back home in Knoxville, Tennessee. Dennis's dad was an architect in Knoxville. And this Father's Day camping trip was a tradition for the men and boys in the Martin family.
It always really breaks my heart on these when we have to talk about a young child. 6 years old, and it's really difficult to give statistics on a six-year-old, like saying that this little boy is 4 foot to 4 foot 1 inch, 55 pounds at the time of his disappearance. And something that happened in 1969, so long ago, you still do have to say that he was wearing at the time a red t-shirt, dark green hiking shorts, white socks, black low-cut Oxford shoes, even though this happened in 1969. So it almost feels irrelevant, but maybe there's somebody out there who, you know, that's what jogs their memory. Maybe some long shot, you know. He did have a learning disability. Nothing too serious. His mental age was about half a year behind his chronological age, but that really didn't contribute to his disappearance as far as we know.
Right.
And anyone with information on Dennis's disappearance is instructed to contact the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation at 615-744-4000.
And so even though Dennis was only 6 years old, he loved hiking and was somewhat experienced for his age. He had been to the Great Smoky Mountains National Park previously with his family, as we mentioned. And the night before his disappearance, they spent the night at Russell Field Shelter, which is about 2 miles west of Spence Field. I really wish that we had more background on what Dennis was like as a person. You know, we obviously like to fill in some details about the victims, but unfortunately, I don't know if it's because of the date of the disappearance or just simply how young Dennis was, there really just isn't too much about his personality.
You find when you get past a certain year, right? When you get past a certain benchmark year, call it 25 years or 30 years, you start losing the finer details that you said we like to fill in the audience on, especially when it's a young child like that. But at this point, what was there, you know, to say of this young boy's life at 6, 7 years old? Loved hiking, loved spending time with his family, apparently.
Yeah, and I think it's important to mention that this seems like an outdoorsy family. Like, that spent a lot of times outdoors. Like, maybe his dad was into, like, bushcraft and stuff. So I'm sure he instructed Dennis on some, like, basic survival techniques and stuff. It just is, like, a part and parcel of that kind of lifestyle. So it's not like, I mean, he's young, but he probably was pretty used to being outside and knew what dangers to look out for. Snakes, you know, falling, that sort of thing.
And Jen, you've been camping at the Great Smoky Mountains. Can you tell us what that was like?
Yeah, I actually spent some time camping right near where our story takes place today, at Katie's Cove, which kind of factors into this case a bit. My experience there was it was like a large campground, lots and lots of families. It was a little confusing, like there's many different rows of campsites and stuff. But everything surrounding these large campsites is like the wild. So if you're like kind of playing in the woods, beyond like the clearing where the campsites are, it's super easy to get turned around. And there's lots of like trails going in and out. Like I think Katie's Cove had like a 10-mile loop trail that you could go through. And I ended up taking that hike actually, and it was really bizarre. At the end of like the furthest you could go on this trail, like wooden church, like old Appalachian church back there. So I like walked in just to see what it looks like. And there was this old man playing a dulcimer just like by himself. So I stayed and listened. So my point being is like, it's really easy even as an adult and an experienced hiker, to get turned around back there.
So the day before Dennis went missing, he and his family were actually hanging out with a different family of Martins. And they're not related, but they apparently kind of hit it off because the kids were playing together on Friday and Saturday.
Why is it that whenever Laura brings one of these to our attention and they're from the Great Smokies, there's always like this group of names that are the same or similar, like Roberts and these Martins now. So just to be clear, the Martin family, Dennis Martin's family, when they were hiking, met another family named Martin.
Right.
And the kids hit it off. So the families are interacting there and they're all sitting there right outside southwest of the Anthony Creek trailhead watching the kids play. Two families of Martins.
And the weather was warm and sunny that day with a high of 87 degrees Fahrenheit and a low of 70 degrees, which occurred at about 5 a.m. that morning. And according to the report that Laura has, the famed Appalachian Trail was filled with resinous smell of sun, big pine needles, and droning of various insects.
I like that word, resinous smell.
Yeah.
It's really evocative.
I can smell it and hear it.
Yeah.
Sounds relaxing.
I mean, it's definitely beautiful in the Smokies. So around 4:30 in the afternoon on June 14th, Dennis and two other boys in this group were playing near the top of the Anthony Creek trailhead. And then according to Dennis's brother Douglas, they decided to sneak up and surprise the adults.
Doug and the two other boys went south and then west and came up upon the adults, while Dennis went northwest, as it were, and intended to come up upon the adults from a north to south direction. And Dennis just disappeared.
And William Martin, Dennis's father, claimed that he could have thrown a rock and hit Dennis where he was hiding. He was hiding about 50 feet away behind a few bushes when he went missing. And he was wearing that bright red shirt and green pants that we noted earlier. And the shirt would have been fairly visible this time of year.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like it's fall when you, like, the eye is drawn to a lot of yellows and reds and stuff. This is like, I mean, early summer, so everything's green.
So this is really where, like, all of that creepiness, that eeriness starts to come into play, because these kids are hiding, and it seems like it was strategic, right? They wanted to approach the adults from different directions to coordinate this scare, this prank for the adults. So Dennis had his plan. He was positioned to approach in a certain direction, and the other two did, and he didn't. So this is where it starts to play out, like, the dramatic recreation that it's feels like, you know, this psychological recreation that it kind of unfolds into.
Right. Dennis intended to surprise the adults from a north to south direction. However, when Dennis left the group, he did not return and he did not surprise the adults. Instead, he vanished into thin air.
So I'm like trying to get into the mindset of a six-year-old here. If you're already playing a game of hide and seek or like hiding to surprise the adults, I'm sure we've all have a memory of doing this as kids. But if your dad or the adults start calling out for you and you're like still in that like, oh, I'm going to hide from them, maybe he was avoiding them intentionally. And this is when he goes further into the woods and actually gets lost.
It's possible, but that wasn't the plan as right. reported by the kids that he was playing with.
Right.
And he's probably watching them so that he knows when to approach as well. And it seems like Dennis's father knew where he was hiding because he made the statement about he could throw a rock to where Dennis's hiding spot was. So we said earlier there was this 5-minute window. It seems like there was this 5-minute window. It seems less than that.
Yeah. Dennis's father said between 3 and 5 minutes. And yeah. I think we kind of conservatively say 10 minutes, but it really does seem more like 3 to 5 minutes and 50 feet away. What?
Yeah, and he couldn't be wearing clothing any brighter.
And so researcher Laura Risti helped us put this episode together, and you will hear clips from her in just a moment. She spent many years investigating Trenny Gibson's 1976 disappearance from the Great Smoky Mountains National Park, as well as Pauline Melton's from the same park in 1981. And make sure to scroll back to hear her other recent appearances on Missing, and scroll back to May of 2020 for our full 7-part series on the disappearance of Trenny Gibson, including one recent episode. And also check out her work at CanadianGirl77.com, and that's girl with a U. So we asked Laura the proximity of Dennis's disappearance in relation to Trenny and Polly's.
He was on in a completely different area of the park. If you want to talk in terms of closeness, he was probably closest to where Trenny disappeared, rather from where Pauline Melton disappeared in the Deep Creek area.
Then we asked Laura how far Dennis was from the other boys when he went missing.
Not far at all.
Within earshot?
Within earshot. They started looking and calling for Dennis right away. The father said there'd been no more than 5 minutes and they started looking for him.
Okay. And what is the terrain like?
Well, the Spence Field is kind of a grassy area, and it runs east and west on the main Great Smoky Mountain Ridge with its north drainages going into Tennessee, and then its south drainages going into North Carolina. And it's 2.5 miles to the next shelter to the west in Russell Field, and is approximately 5 miles to the next AT shelter to the east, which would be on Derrick Knob. It's thickety. Spence Field and that area and Cade's Cove, at one time it was grazed by cattle.
So as we mentioned, the search for Dennis began no more than 5 or 10 minutes after he was last seen. And Dennis's father, William, covered the trail 1 mile east and 2.5 miles back to the west, calling Dennis's name over and over to no avail.
I mean, at this point, we're getting down to like specific minutes. And I don't want to get too hung up on this, but I really want to drive the point home here. This was an instantaneous search once they realized that Dennis wasn't coming back and we got to find him. There's nothing else to do, right? This isn't a trip where they were doing multiple things and they needed to take care of something and then go look for Dennis. Like, Dennis disappeared. They went to go find him.
Mm-hmm.
In different directions.
Yeah, it's not like, you know, this is a, you know, a cul-de-sac somewhere where your kid disappears for 10 minutes. This is like the wilds of Tennessee. Yeah, you can't let any time elapse.
And at this point, Clyde Martin, Dennis's grandfather, made the long walk off Spence Field and went to Cady's Cove Ranger Station, which is 8 miles away, to report Dennis's disappearance.
Good for Clyde. Everyone in this family seems like they're pretty well equipped to hike and adapt themselves to the wild or the wilderness.
Yeah, they certainly knew how to respond. Like, they split up to cover more ground. They went for help so they could call in rangers.
And Ranger Larry Nielsen was alarmed about an approaching storm, in addition to Dennis's young age, obviously. And thunderheads were rolling in, and he immediately notified the dispatcher at park headquarters. And by this time, it was 8:28 p.m., and Dennis had been missing for 4 hours.
Gosh, I can't imagine the terror.
This is like the next part of the storytelling, right? If this was a fictional story, thunderheads are rolling in and we are concerned about impending bad weather right at the heels of this kid missing. It's, again, it's like someone wrote this.
A party of rangers and other park employees, they searched for Dennis throughout that night. But there had been a thunderstorm, and an estimated 2.5 inches of rain had been dumped on the area before daylight broke on Sunday. And then large gullies of water swept down the mountainside and, you know, turned into turbulent streams of water. Then the heavy rain erased any tracks, probably Dennis's scent. So using bloodhounds or other tracking dogs was fairly useless. And it made the trail slippery and treacherous, like with the mud. So anyway, the chief ranger kind of formulated a plan for Sunday morning. A crew of 30 men and 5 leaders was going to be set up. And then along with 10 crews of 4 men and 10 leaders. And then Spence Field was the designated search camp. And efforts were going to be made to procure a helicopter. And yeah, the next day at 5 a.m., so that would have been Sunday, June 15th, Father's Day, that's when the search began. And it's worth noting, too, like when Trenny disappeared, there was a really bad storm that night. Lots of rain, fog, cold, visibility was very poor, high winds.
Then on Sunday morning, Dennis's mother arrived at the park for the search, and she was briefed by the officials, and they were guardedly optimistic that they'd find Dennis. They started with a drainage search in an area near Spence Field. Search members worked their ways down the gullies, streams, and creeks, checking to see if Dennis could have fallen into some water. Laura speaks about the search.
In the night, 40 special forces had arrived, along with two Huey helicopters from the Eastern Air Rescue Service in Georgia. They searched all day. The forest, of course, was sodden, like it was wet, and they didn't find Dennis. So then the park officials made plans then to intensify things. And they established a heliport in Cades Cove on Monday. And then the American Red Cross set up a food service for the search members. And then Monday night, so that would have been the 16th of June, 40 Green Berets arrived, a crack self-contained search team with a communications van. And the total force then for that Monday was 300 people. Now, I just kind of want to interject here that after the search was over for Dennis Martin, they realized that the Park Service did that. They were definitely going to have to make some changes to how the missing were searched for in the Great Smoky Mountains. Because you think about it, you get all these people and all these people come to help search. But you have all these people tramping with heavy boots, you know, through the forest and everything else and through the mud and whatnot. And they obliterated any sign of this little boy. You know, if you listen to Dwight McCarter, for years, he was basically a tracker, a searcher with the NPS. And he always said that his grandmother taught him that when you're looking for someone in the woods, you got to look for the white, like where they've stepped on a twig and broken it or a branch or something like that. You've got to look for the white. Well, you know, with all these men tramping through with these heavy boots and everything else, you know, it's pretty hard to see anything. If there were any footprints, you know, that Dennis might have left, they were either washed away or squashed by all these searchers. So it forever changed the way that the missing were searched for in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park, and actually like all over the world as well. His case was a study of, you know, part and parcel, maybe what not to do to search for someone.
Putting yourselves in the shoes of these people who are searching, not ever had searched for somebody to this extent, must have been this harrowing, wild experience. What are you expecting to find? You know what I mean? Like, are you expecting to find this little boy alive? Or what condition will he be in?
Well, they actually had plans for any outcome. Which is pretty good, I suppose, and really speaks to how intricate the search was.
Yeah, and I'm sure it didn't make it any easier that this storm had rolled in so quickly, potentially damaging any kind of trail that Dennis would have left behind.
Yeah, I think the weather definitely hindered the search, and the search continued on Tuesday.
Boat Mountain Road was the only vehicle access to Spence Field, and it ended up turning like into a quagmire just from the rains and the heavy use. And then as the sun rolled the fog away, they set up another heliport at Russell Field on the AT. And two Air Force, what they called Jolly Green Giant helicopters, were pressed into service. The U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary began to patrol the north shore of Fontana Lake, believing that Dennis might have fallen a stream down the mountain and it led to the lake. Or he fell in one and was carried to the lake by the turbulent water.
And it wasn't very long before psychics started reaching out and calling.
With this search, there were a lot of clairvoyants that started to call in with different visions and things like that. One of the most famous was Jean Dixon. She, I believe, and I could be wrong on this, but your listeners would correct me if I were. I believe that she predicted the Kennedy assassination. She said that he was going to be found alive, and he was just a short distance away from where he had last been seen. He'd gone down an incline and he was in that area. But of course, we know that that was not the case. Dennis was not in that area, or he would have been found. So they kept searching. But of course, you know, the chances of finding Dennis alive were starting to diminish. Because, I mean, in the Smokies, there's cliffs, there's sharp rocks, there's bluffs, there's swift streams. There's animals, wildcats, boar, bear, rattlesnake, copperheads. They did check bear and boar excrement for any signs of human remains. They were checking buzzards just to see if, you know, there'd been any buzzard activity or anything like that.
And there's some dangerous animals in the area for sure, but it doesn't seem like an animal got Dennis. Because I don't know, wouldn't he have been found potentially, or some remnants?
Yeah, I think this area is home to black bears, mountain lions, rattlesnakes, that sort of thing. I imagine if it was like a big cat or like a big predator or something, you probably would see some sort of evidence of an attack. But say Dennis wandered, you know, further than we think and got bit by a snake, you would have to stumble over Dennis if you're going to find him.
You know, we talk about missing persons and whether or not they were taken by a bear or a wild boar attack. And we always say, wouldn't you find some sort of evidence of this? And it's pretty rare, unless it's not, you know, unless I'm missing something. But when was the last time we heard of someone's body located with clear evidence of it being a bear attack?
Yeah, clear evidence, I think you'd have to have been found right away.
Yeah.
But with over 1,400 people searching for Dennis, I just don't understand how they didn't find him.
A shirt, a piece of a shirt, a part of his shoe, part of something.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. They must have covered so much ground looking for him. It almost leads you to think that maybe Dennis had been taken out of the park in some way.
One thing I've run into a lot of times with this when people are talking about Dennis Martin's case, I get people that are a little bit confused over why special forces personnel, why they were called in. And basically, Franklin, North Carolina, I believe it was a couple of days after Dennis went missing, so it would have been the Monday, they notified the park that 500 special forces personnel from Fort Bragg, North Carolina, were on maneuvers in the Nantahala Gorge near Robbinsville, North Carolina, and they would be an available source of manpower. So they brought them on board to come and help search for Dennis. But a lot of people read into that and think that, oh no, you know, like, were we dealing with some kind of supernatural thing in the Smokies? Is that why they, you know, pulled the special forces in and so on and so forth? I don't really read into that. I just think, you know, hey, they were handy. They called them, come on in and, you know, give us a hand, right? So anyway, they got nowhere really near with the clairvoyants, although they didn't frown upon them or just not take their predictions seriously. They did search the area where they said that they thought they had seen them. Bill Martin, he was riding over the search area in a Tennessee Highway Patrol helicopter, and he was calling his son's name over a bullhorn. So by Saturday, the 21st of June, Dennis Martin had been missing for an entire week. You know, a third heliport was established so that the helicopters could ferry in searchers under low cloud cover. And the search party had grown to 1,400 men, extra troops, rangers, volunteers. A dead or alive plan was set up. If found, Dennis was judged dead only if rigor mortis had set in. If this situation proved to be true, then the search members were to guard the child's body until reached by the proper officials. But of course, they were hoping he was going to be found alive. He would then be helicoptered to the U.S. Marine Reserve Base in Knoxville, where an ambulance would be standing by to rush him to the University of Tennessee Hospital for treatment. The general area of the search was 56 3/4 square miles, while the intensive search area had covered 12.5 square miles. And then a Green Beret officer speaking to members of the press said, when we search an area for a man and don't find him, then he isn't there. Those kind of statements, they set off speculation that Dennis was not in the area. Search staff members held a conference with FBI agent Jim Reich. There were rumors of a possible kidnapping, and of course these rumors spread. Searchers following odors found the body of several small animals, including one dog. Vultures were watched, and they were spotted with heavy vulture activity, but it turned out to be a dead bobcat. And then on Sunday, June 29th, family members, park officials, and FBI agents gathered together basically to ask the question, well, where do we go from here? There wasn't any evidence to support a kidnapping, and the FBI said it couldn't launch any full-scale investigation, but it did offer to continue the investigation as it was presently being conducted. And the family said they were going to offer a reward for any information leading to Dennis. And as of 6 p.m. That evening, Sunday, June 29th, the most massive search using modern equipment at that time in Park Service history, it came to an end.
And we'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Thanks to our sponsors, and now we're back to the program. Now we'll get into some theories of where Dennis could be or what happened to him. And before we hear Laura's thoughts, what do you both think?
I mean, we kind of discussed it at the top of this. Like, I just have no idea what happened. I think we've probably talked about this at length in these other cases that Laura has covered. But when you have like such vast wilderness, it's, I think the most likely situation is he got lost.
Tough to say, like, definitively, like, he got lost. It's odd to say that he became lost in the wilderness when the plan was to sneak up on the adults and startle them and scare them. I don't know. I don't really remember much when I was 6 years old or 7 years old, but that sounds like a really fun plan. And I would have been in motion to do that when the others were in motion to do that. I don't know. I don't know why one would deviate from the plan. That seems like a really fun plan.
So in my mind, one of two things happened. Like, either Dennis was actually abducted by somebody right near where he was hiding and taken elsewhere. Or I really do think it's possible that Dennis was like still playing a game in his head. And it's like it was exciting to him that the adults were like worried about him and calling for him. And so he was like watching them, but still hiding or maybe running away further on. Still doesn't explain why, you know, he wasn't found after such a massive ground search, but it's still possible.
You know, yeah, that's a great point. Maybe because the other kids had put the plan in motion and had been discovered, he thought to himself after hearing his name called, maybe I can approach from a different angle. I'll go in a little deeper, cut back around and approach from a different angle. I can totally see that, like trying to make the game even better.
Yeah, totally. I have this like not comparable story, but like when my brother was very young, I think he was probably around Dennis's age, maybe 5, 6 years old. And we were in like a big department store in a mall and he had been hiding under the clothes racks. And then we got kind of panicked when we didn't know where he was. And luckily, he's like really bad at hiding. But he was like avoiding us and moving between racks of clothing because he thought it was like a fun game or whatever. I don't think kids really realize how how dangerous it is.
Right.
I think we've all done that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've definitely hidden in clothes racks and moved from clothes rack to clothes rack and terrified my parents.
Was it yesterday?
Yeah, a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I definitely recall that now that you both mentioned it as well. That was fun. Marshalls, Bradleys, Kmart, those kind of stores.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, totally can see Dennis doing something like that.
Maybe.
But I feel like I could see a kid getting kidnapped in a department store as more likely than out in the Great Smoky Mountains under the circumstances where Dennis went missing.
Mm-hmm.
I could believe there's a predator in the mall or something that, you know, it just blends in over someone in this vast area that just, I guess, picks him up and gets away with him.
I agree. That being said, Laura keeps bringing these stories to us that take place in the Great Smoky Mountain National Park, and we keep hearing these stories. So what is it about this area that causes people to go missing? Are we just overthinking it?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people go missing from national parks.
Yeah, that's pretty statistically proven. If you plan on kidnapping somebody, what is the purpose of doing it? Why would somebody wait to kidnap Dennis? Why would somebody wait to kidnap a six-year-old boy?
Yeah, it's a good question.
They need a child. They want to kidnap this child and put him up for ransom. They just wait in the woods until the right child hides from the adults.
It sounds really unlikely to me.
I mean, I don't know. I'm going to play like devil's advocate for a second. Like if you are, if you are a predator, a campsite is a very likely spot to abduct a kid because, you know, as a parent, you're like kind of on vacation. You're hanging out with other, you know, parents around a fire, you know, playing games, whatever. I think it's a pretty likely situation that you could isolate a kid and get him on his own.
Well, Dennis's father believes that Dennis was kidnapped. And we asked Laura if the other Martin family had criminal records or anything that could lead folks to think Dennis could have been kidnapped and taken out of the park.
No, there was one theory that this other family, who was also named Martin, there was one theory that perhaps Dennis was kidnapped and the kidnapper somehow had the families confused and kidnapped the wrong boy. There was some speculation with that. The Martin family, Mr. William Martin, he went to his grave basically believing that Dennis was kidnapped.
Okay, so there was no criminal record for the other Martin family. They had nothing that would suggest that as a family, they would go camping and make the decision to kidnap a little boy.
Right.
Just in case this wasn't scary enough.
Yeah, there's some witness accounts from the Key family.
There was a family whose last name was Key. And they were camping in an area of the park called Rowan Creek. And they claim that they heard this almost like a screech, like a very, very loud, high-pitched scream. Then they saw this figure carrying something over its shoulder and looking like it was walking out of the area. And apparently, Mr. Key, he reported this both to the Park Service and the authorities that this was, you know, something very, very disturbing, and he was quite concerned about it. Mr. Martin was quite upset that he didn't find out about it through the proper channels, where he didn't find out about it through the Park Service or those investigating the case. He actually read about it in the newspaper. So he went on to write a letter. It's dated here July 28th, 1969. And he's talking to the Great Smoky Mountains National Park regarding the search for Dennis Martin. He's speaking of, during the past week, I contacted a person, Mr. Keyes, who may have seen a kidnapper. I talked to Mr. Keyes long distance several times, and he volunteered to come to the Smokies. He was contacted and came here to locate the area where he saw a suspicious person. Ranger Ed Widmer, an FBI agent, met with Mr. Keyes. No attempt was made to contact me. In this case, me means Mr. William Martin. I found out about 9 p.m. the next night that Mr. Keyes had been there. After calling Mr. Keyes at his home, I found that no explanation was given to him why I wasn't present. At my request, Ranger Widmer showed me the area the next day. This morning, I found in the newspaper that Chief Ranger Lee Sneddon gave a complete description of the visit to the local press. The description, complete with the map, was given to the press for public knowledge before I knew that Mr. Keyes was here. Even so, the description is incorrect. The branch described is only 1 mile away from the place that was visited. The terrain and foliage is completely different. I visited Ranger Sneddon today and I discussed this situation. His answer was, well, you have to cooperate with the press. I feel that I should have had this sort of information rather than the press. The public has now read this distorted report, and I expect many new stories and versions to be offered. We already have too many stories from persons who do not have correct information. Mr. Keyes, he passed away, I believe, in 2010. So he described this scream that he heard. It was one long, loud, painful scream. On July 21st, 1969, The Knoxville Journal ran an article titled Foul Play Suggested in Martin Boy Mystery. The paper had a formal interview with Harold Key. The article had many more details than were available through the NPS reports. Mr. Harold Key is a highway engineer, and his cousin is Baxter Key, who was the attorney general for the district. It was his cousin who convinced him to make his information public. Key stated that his family went to Cades Cove, an area below the region where Dennis Martin disappeared. They were there the afternoon the boy disappeared, so again on June 14th, 1969. Key stated that the family went looking for bears. The family parked their car and started to hike. My wife and daughter did not go far with us. We had gone a half mile or so when we heard an awful scream that sounded like someone in trouble. There was a stream there. As we were going up to it, one of my boys said, "Look, Daddy, there's a bear." I looked. It wasn't a bear, it was a man. I didn't get a good look at him because he seemed to be trying to stay hidden behind bushes.
So how many witnesses to this person?
So it would have been Mr. Key was there, his wife, his daughter. He said, "One of my boys," so boys plural. So he must have had at least two sons.
So at least four of them were there, and they all heard the scream.
Yeah, and at the time this happened, Mr. Key did not know that Dennis was missing. He found out the following day that he was, and then at that point he contacted authorities. And park officials discounted the likelihood that this sighting was involved in the disappearance, because they felt it was too far from the point where Dennis disappeared. They didn't even really want to go in the area and investigate. One interesting side note is that Mr. Key's son had stated to another newspaper that he had heard or seen a bear in this same area, just as they saw someone or something darting between the trees. So then Dwight McCarter, and I mean, we all know who he was. He also helped in the search for Trenny. He was a National Park Service ranger at that time. In fact, he was just fresh out of Vietnam, I believe. So many years later, Carter did give an interview about the event and specifically addressed the scream and the sighting near Rowan's Creek. And Mr. Carter stated that Sea Branch is downhill from that location that Dennis disappeared, and it was his opinion that a physically fit man could carry a small boy between those two points. Nobody ever did really address the huge scream that was heard.
So this is quite a twist in the story, and it's very unclear what was seen, a bear, an unkempt man, but it sounds very clear what was heard. A blood-curdling scream was heard by four different people.
Yeah, that's absolutely terrifying. And we have a little kind of detail in here that reminds me of Trenny Gibson's case. The Keys family said that they were searching for bears in the mm-hmm. same way that...
Robert Simpson.
Yeah, schoolmate Robert Simpson said that he had also been tracking a bear. I mean, probably has no connection whatsoever. But it's just like, who are all these people that like go looking for trouble in the woods?
Tracking a bear. That doesn't even compute in my head. I remember the first time we heard that from Laura. Doesn't even compute. I do not track bears.
Mm-mm.
I try to not be in the proximity of bears.
Yeah, unless you're like on a hunting excursion and you're armed and stuff. But
so the Key family heard this blood-curdling scream while they were in the area of Rowan's Creek. And I'm wondering if there's any indication that this was within earshot of where the family was at Cades Cove, because looking at the map, it seems like it's quite a distance, but kind of hard to tell because the way you access these two areas is through trails and it's not just like as the crow flies straight line.
Right. Yeah. I'm not sure how many miles, but Laura mentions that park officials discounted the likelihood that this sighting was involved in Dennis's disappearance because they thought it was too far from where he had disappeared from. I don't know if that's underestimating a 6-year-old kid or what, but apparently there was this blood-curdling scream.
Kind of hard to swallow that officials would write that off. This scream happens around the same time as a child goes missing, and they've determined that it's too far away. I mean, how do you make that determination? Is it just coincidence?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, can chalk it up to, you know, a lots of noises in the forest that sound like a scream. Have you guys ever heard a fox cry?
Yeah. Or a fisher cat?
Yeah. Yeah. They definitely sound human.
Yeah. Good point.
But what about the thing that was allegedly carrying Dennis? It's a bear? This is an unkept man? What the heck was that?
I don't know. Yeah, that's so scary.
I mean, this guy Key really doubles down on this. Like, he really swears by what he saw.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, Jen, you've done some hiking. Have you ever done anything like the Appalachian Trail or anything like that?
I have never thru-hiked the Appalachian Trail, but I've hiked sections of it.
Yeah.
I've never seen a creature carrying what looks like to be a six-year-old boy, though.
No. I haven't either, but in my time doing the part of the Appalachian Trail in the White Mountains in New Hampshire, they have the huts that the AMC huts that you can stay at. They serve you food, and people who run those huts are very familiar with the trails, and they're able to haul trash up and down the mountains on a daily basis.
Oh, true.
They run the mountains. So if this individual, this figure that they saw, was associated with maintaining the trails, and whatever they had over their back was maybe a satchel or a trash bag or something, they were just hauling it out of the area, I could see that. And a lot of the times these individuals who run these trails and maintain the mountain area, maintain the wilderness, they're not the most clean-cut individuals because they're outside all the time. They wear clothing that, you know, in layers, and typically look a bit unkempt.
I could see that.
Yeah, that's a good point, Lance. It could additionally just have been a hiker with a pack, right?
Yeah. Seeing something like that without the scream wouldn't have been unusual, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But the scream. So what the heck was the scream if it wasn't Dennis or a fisher cat or a fox?
Yeah, I really don't know.
And we'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Thanks to our sponsors. And now we're back to the program. And Laura tells us about another twist.
So in July of 1985, longtime ginseng hunter, he contacted Dwight, and he related a story from one of his trips in search of ginseng in the park several years before. He said that he and another person were looking for ginseng up in the Big Hollow area in Tremont. And they were coming up the right side of the stream and were about 200 feet away from the creek. And as they neared this little waterfall, he noticed some bones lying near where a tree had uprooted and left a kind of a level spot. And he said the bones definitely looked like that of a child. The skull was there. He said it looked like animals had scattered the bones, and he thought, you know, maybe this was Dennis Martin. He'd kept it quiet for a while because he was hunting ginseng illegally, right? So Dwight contacted his friends at the Swain County Rescue Squad in Bryson City, and 30 men came out the following weekend, and they did a thorough search, but they didn't find anything. One thing people need to realize, though, that leaf litter in the park, you know, the leaves, when they fall off the trees in the autumn, they collect to the tune of, oh, probably about a half inch a year. So if you sit and you think about this for a while, if Dennis passed away in that area in 1969 and they were looking for him in 1985, well, 16 years had passed. So, you know, you do the math and think, well, you know, approximately half an inch of leaves, and you multiply that by 16 years. The bones might be there, but they're buried under about 8 inches of leaves and other debris, right?
Hang on. So this guy found bones and didn't tell anybody for 16 years?
Yeah. He apparently was afraid he would be in trouble for the ginseng hunting, which was illegal, I guess, in that area.
I mean, okay.
And now we have to play this moment where Laura mentions David Politis. And David Politis, very interesting guy. He's the author of the Missing 411 series, and he's been accused of bringing Bigfoot or other fantastical ideas into missing persons cases. And you can probably see why if you've consumed any of his work. But there are multiple conspiracy theories abound in Dennis's case. and without any explanation for his disappearance. I actually think that's a pretty natural thing to happen in a missing persons case. But here Laura speaks about Politis.
And I will point out here that David Politis, he's one of those folks that think there was some kind of conspiracy theory type of thing going on, because the Green Berets were in the park, they set up their own communications, and they went out into the woods armed, and of course he fell all over that like a fat boy on a Smartie, thinking that it's strange, and there's something really, really weird going on here, and there's some monster living in the woods and whatnot. But I don't think it was anything more than, you know, they were just on their maneuvers. It was a training exercise for them.
What do you guys think about that? That this David Politis is super famous and successful and using these disappearances as his springboard to numerous books and interviews and speaking engagements. And you can literally make up anything. Tim, you said about the red shirt. You know, people go missing in the wilderness, they, oh, this person has a red shirt and this person has a red shirt. Well, that's not that uncommon. Like, if you're going camping, if you're going hiking, a lot of people wear bright clothing and a lot of people have red shirts because they don't want to blend in with the forest if they go deeper into the forest.
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of Politis's work has to do with national parks, you know, disappearances in national parks. Well, you know, a national park is like probably the most likely place in America to disappear.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are so many dangers.
Falling.
In the wilderness. Falling. Snakes. Yeah, well, I think it's a natural thing to, like, go into a bit of conspiracy theory and, like, fantastical ideas when a mystery continues for this long. And there's really no clear answer here at all. As far as Politis, though, like, it's entertaining. It's, these ideas are entertaining and stuff, but it really is kind of capitalizing on this family's tragedy and really doesn't move the needle any closer to figuring out what happened to Dennis or people like him.
Right.
Yeah. And the unfortunate thing is that maybe some people will say, well, the popularity of Politis has brought additional eyes to Dennis Martin's disappearance, but it really didn't. It brings additional eyes to the Bigfoot in the woods and the monster in the woods and that part of it. Not like, now I'm going to reach out to Dennis's family, his existing family, and give my condolences. It's towards the conspiracy and the fantastical side, which is fine, but don't come from it from a place of, like, false compassion.
Yeah, I think the problem for me isn't so much, like, his approach to the awareness. It's when he's connecting the cases.
Yeah.
I think that can be very problematic. And Laura has one final kind of incredible possibility to tell us about.
Dwight McCarter also talked about there are wild men that live in the park. For whatever reason, they have left society behind. They have little contact with humanity, and they just kind of appear, as the name implies, just wild and unkempt. Dwight says he did know about them. He'd seen them on more than one occasion, and they do exist in the park, these feral people. What exactly they'd want with Dennis Martin, I can't venture to guess. But, you know, you could read into that what you will. But Dwight did not try to dispute that their existence is real.
So, holy moly, this legendary former park ranger Dwight McCarter believes that these feral wild men are real and have lived inside the Great Smoky Mountains National Park for a long time.
I buy it.
Yeah, I believe it. I mean, we definitely know... I don't know if that makes them, like, nefarious and, like, want to
right.
kidnap or harm a child. But we definitely know about, I mean, some are quite famous, like hermits. I don't know of a particular one in the Smoky Mountains, but I know there's, like, the Hermit of Hoh Valley in Washington in Olympic National Park, I'm pretty sure. So, yeah, it's this guy who lives out in nature and occasionally comes into town for some food wares. But yeah, it's just a lifestyle.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a guy in Maine a couple years ago who was breaking into cabins. He was living in the wilderness. So yeah, that kind of thing is definitely a thing.
Yeah.
But it's almost like taking on folklore or you know, status as far as the Smokies go.
Yeah.
You mentioned Christopher Knight, who is the subject of the book, The Stranger in the Woods. I believe that book was titled, written by Michael Finkel. Great book. And that was the one in Maine who was breaking into cabins. And he just literally drove his car down a dirt road, left it, and walked into the woods and just lived there for, I think it was like 20-something years, 30 years. And I mean, by the time they found his car, it was like all overgrown. But he, my point is, had no intention to hurt anybody. His point to get into the woods, his reason for going into the woods and living there was because he didn't like the noise of life. He just liked the silence. He wanted to be in silence. And that goes a long way. And when you're thinking about an area as vast as the Great Smoky National Forest, that must be a perfect spot for somebody who just wants to go away. And a lot of the times people like observing families as they hike. They like to almost act as protectors. Like, it doesn't strike me as nefarious whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that compulsion. Sometimes I fantasize about going off the grid.
I think we all do.
Yeah, I suppose so. But I think you're right, Tim. Like, this is this, like, image of the, like, feral Appalachian folk has been perpetuated in a lot of media. And it's kind of a stereotype about those people.
Yeah, like The Hills Have Eyes, which is mentioned.
Right, or the Wrong Turn movies, I think, is yep. Even more specific geographically to where The Hills Have Eyes. But, you know, I think there's some possibility that Dennis Martin's disappearance helped to inspire those screenplays.
Yeah, definitely, because it really is a good setup. I mean, we've been saying it as we've been talking about this. It plays out like a psychological thriller, like a effective psychological thriller. So you can totally take inspiration for this. But then you enter into the world of like Hollywood liberties. Just because there are people who are getting off the grid and going in and living off the land and not being part of society doesn't make them
a family of cannibals.
A family of monstrous cannibals, yeah.
Right.
I think you have Deliverance too.
Yep.
So we know Dennis's father has since passed away, and I can't believe how tragic that is to, you know, leave this earth without any answers as to what happened to your son. For the sake of Dennis's siblings who are still around, I hope for some closure for this family.
Yeah, absolutely. Good point made right there. And this is a relatively well-known case because of David Politis, but I like the fact that we're using it to actually talk about Dennis's disappearance and considering the family and not going down the rabbit hole of Bigfoot or whatever. And Laura does a great job in guiding us in that direction, that she doesn't think it's this or that, that there's probably a much more reasonable explanation for a six-year-old with slight developmental issues going missing in these woods. So if you enjoy Politis, fine, he's entertaining, but just know, like you said, Jen, there's family still out there who one day had a son or brother, and they don't now. And it happened within 2 to 3 minutes with no answers.
And finally, here are Laura Ristie's closing thoughts on what she thinks happened to Dennis.
I always believed that Dennis, being a bit of a, almost, I don't want to say hyperactive, because I don't necessarily know if that was the case. Like, again, I say special education in 1969 was an entirely different thing. But I believe he got spooked and he took off and he just kept on trucking. And he got far out of the search area and he got a lot further than they ever thought he could. At one point, they thought that they found a footprint, a small size footprint, somebody wearing a small size shoe. Dennis was wearing an Oxford-style shoe with a simple heel when he disappeared. It looked like the person that was wearing this shoe, they were, like, limping, like, walking kind of and almost, like, if not dragging the other limb, heavily limping. And the other limb, the foot, did not have a shoe on it. So this person was only wearing one shoe. So it's possible if this was Dennis, he turned his ankle or sprained his ankle and had to take the shoe off and was limping. But again, nothing came out of this evidence. Of course, they never did find Dennis. And all these years later, he's still a missing person. But I think he just got so far out of the search area is my thought. I've worked with children that have special needs and disabilities. They got a lot of energy, you know. If they are determined to get away or something, or if they get scared, they will just keep going and going and going. And I think eventually just what happened is either Dennis succumbed to the elements or this injury that he suffered, and that was it. I think it's possible that those remains that were found in the big hollow area up in Tremont there were that of Dennis Martin.